Hey friends, and welcome to episode 38 of Health Simple Radio. We're joined with Todd White, who's the CEO and founder of Dry Farm Wines. They make absolutely incredible wines, just so you're aware. Now, this episode is going to teach you more about wine than you ever thought you could possibly know. Now, I know a lot of you listeners are very health conscious, and you want to make the right choices with the alcohol beverages that you drink. And so that's the purpose of this episode. We often think that when we go into our stores and buy a bottle of wine, it comes from a natural local farm from a small town. But is this really true? We also hear that wine is associated with a greater lifespan. And, you know, it contains things like resveratrol, so it's healthy for you. But does the science really support that? In this episode, Todd, who is a biohacker himself, so he's involved in everything from intermittent fasting to ketogenic diets and cold showers and everything he can do to improve his biology, is going to share his insights into the wine industry and what they're not telling you. He's also going to give some nice practical tips for you on how you can choose the healthiest and the best types of wines when you're in the grocery store or when you're at the restaurant. Todd was also kind enough to provide a wonderful deal to Health Simple Radio listeners to get a bottle of wine from Dry Farm Wines, his business, for just one penny. So when you make your first order on their website, you'll get an extra bottle for just 1 cent. Now, they only deliver in the US, so this is only for the American listeners. Sorry to everyone else in the world. Now, if you want to redeem your bottle for 1 cent, just head to dryfarmwines.com/healthsimple. I'll leave the links in the show notes below. Now, before we get into this episode, if you haven't checked out our new ebook, So You Want to Eat Healthy, then I highly recommend you do that now. We've had some really great reviews since launching it. This book is going to teach you how to eat a real whole food diet. It can help you with losing weight, improving your energy levels or your health, and just making you feel and look much better. So just go to healthsimpleinfo.com/eat-healthy. We also are providing a discount code of 25% off until November 25th. This is a Black Friday sale, so make sure to use the code Black Friday 25, and you'll get 25% off your purchase of the ebook. Without further ado, here's Todd. Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to the Health Simple Show. I'm your host, Kyle Reedhead, and I interview health and wellness experts from around the world to help you live healthy, happy, and stress-free. Enjoy the next show.
Oh, wow. Well, I have got a lot of really interesting, surprising, dirty, dark secrets of the wine business you share today. So anyway, my background, I've been an entrepreneur since I was 17. I've launched about 10 companies. This is hopefully my last. And it's been an amazing journey with Dry Farm Wines. I created Dry Farm Wines because I've been a lifelong biohacker and also a really lifelong wine aficionado. I've been drinking since I was about 9, so I was a bit of a bad boy. And so I, as my journey in biophacking, about 4.5 years ago, almost 5 years ago now, I started experimenting with a ketogenic diet, long sort of sexy and popular. And I'd learned about keto through the biohacking community. And when I initially started, I was trying to break through this kind of minor weight loss plateau. Like I thought I had, you know, just like had this pesky extra 5 pounds I was trying to lean out and rip out. And keto will certainly do that for you. Yeah. And so I started experimenting with ketogenic diet, and I lost the weight and even some more, but I really enjoyed the cognitive benefits so much from being ketogenic that I continued the diet and started experimenting more, and then more into intermittent fasting. And now I'm doing all kinds of crazy. Now I've been experimenting I've been for fasting, which we could talk about, which is really pretty fascinating. I've been on doing 23-hour daily fast, only eating once per day for about 2.5 years now.
Wow.
Now I've started experimenting with eating every other day. And next I'm going to start experimenting with not eating on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of every week. So
So
I also don't drink wine on the days I fast, on the extended fast. On the daily fast, of course, I drink wine every day. But anyways, I got deeper into ketosis and my nutritional programming became very, very specific. I found I couldn't drink wines anymore and that they were higher in alcohol. So I started looking for lower alcohol wines. And as we'll talk about, we only drink and sell low alcohol wines because we believe alcohol, this will be surprising to your audience from the wine guy, but we believe alcohol is a very dangerous neurotoxin, right? And so, and must be dealt with care and respect. It's also addictive. It's very dangerous. And so, which is why we only drink and sell lower alcohol wines, as low as 6%. That being said, I thought initially it was just that the alcohol is very high in commercial wine. So American wines now average almost 15% by volume. Most of the wines at 10 and 11%, and some are lower, but some are a little bit higher. But so as I got a little bit closer to what was happening in commercial wines, and let's say commercial wines, I'm talking about everything you see in a wine shop, everything you see in a grocery store, those are all commercial wines. And I don't care whether you pay $150 a bottle or $15 a bottle, they're commercial wines unless they're naturally made. And natural wines are a very specific farming and winemaking protocol. But most people say, well, isn't all wine natural? Because that's what the wine industry would have you to believe. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that's not true. Most wines, there are only about 500 or 600 farms in the world, and almost all of them are in Europe, that actually make natural wines. The rest of what you see out there is not real wine, including everything you see in your grocery store. It does, most of it does have grape juice in it or fermented grape juice, but there's a whole lot of other stuff in it. So what the reason your audience doesn't know about this other stuff, the dirty dark secrets of the wine industry, is that there are 76 additives for the use in winemaking. Now, why your audience doesn't know about that is because the wine industry has spent tens of millions of dollars in lobby money to politicians to keep contents labeling off of wine. So wine is the only major food group without a contents label. Now, if it had a contents label on it, it would look just like the rest of processed foods that you're buying in the grocery store. It would have this kind of squarish rectangular list of ingredients. Mm-hmm. Most of which you couldn't pronounce or have any idea what they are. Some things like ammonia phosphate, you know, copper phosphate, these heavy metals and other toxins that are used in winemaking quite commonly and by most, because the problem is when you make wine in large quantities, you must use these additives and additions to control the environment to protect the wine from bacterial faults. This is basically what's happening. Natural winemakers do not use any of these additives. The other thing that happens with commercial wines is that at bottling, they get a large dose of sulfur dioxide. That also translates into sulfites. Now, all wines, whether they have additional sulfur dioxide, contain sulfites. Sulfites are an occurring process during fermentation. The fermentation of anything. Mm-hmm. Right, whether it's kombucha or sauerkraut or anything that's fermented has sulfites in it, and sulfites are everywhere in food, dry fruit, potato chips. It's everywhere, right? In fact, wine, on a natural occurring basis, contains very, very low sulfites contained to many other food types. So sulfites are not really the problem, except what happens is that the commercial winemaker dumps in the sulfur dioxide into the tank just before bottling to sterilize the wine, or what we call mummify the wine, right? They kill the wine to McDonaldize it. The bottle tastes exactly the same, right? You get this shelf consistency product. Mm-hmm. It's also a preservative. But what the most important thing from our perspective that it does is it kills the wine. It robs the wine of its soul and energy because it mummifies, it kills the wine. And along in this death process of the wine also kills gut-friendly bacteria and the positive microbiomes that are the bacteria that are positive for your microbiome. And Dr. David Perlmutter, who's an expert on the gut and brain, as you might know, New York Times bestselling author who endorses our wine, has also published a couple of times on these positive bacteria that are alive and living in natural wines. You won't find them in commercial wines because it's been killed. The other thing that's happening in commercial wines that's very disturbing is that the fermentation process is not natural. So commercial wines are fermented with genetically modified lab-grown yeast. Now, natural wines are fermented with the wild native yeast that's indigenous to the vineyard where the grapes are grown, and yeast is on the skin of every wine grape in the world. So with a commercial wine, the first thing the winemaker does is, again, uses a sulfur dioxide, because it's a very powerful sterilizer, to yeast. And then they inoculate the grape juice with this lab-grown yeast, which is also genetically modified to do several things. It's modified to have flavor enhancements. It's modified to withstand higher alcohol environments, because a native yeast will die from too high of an alcohol, right? And so, and speaking of alcohol, as I mentioned earlier, so alcohol levels in wine has been increasing in the United States for about 20 years. So 20, 30 years ago, all wines in the U.S. were 12 or 12.5%. Now they're averaging near 15 and some up to 17, 18%. Averaging almost 15. So the wine industry likes alcohol. See that this alcohol is addictive. And alcohol is also what we call and refer to as a domino drug. So what I mean by that is the more you drink, the more you're likely to drink, mm-hmm. right? So the higher the dose of alcohol, the more likely you are to drink more alcohol. You've probably had this experience before, I would imagine. Of course. Have you ever had that experience?
I definitely have.
Yeah, for sure.
More than once.
For sure. For sure. So the problem with that is that drinking at that level and at that rate, as you know, is not healthy for your brain or your body, but particularly your brain. The other thing that alcohol does is it gives wine a bolder, richer taste. Okay. And so that bold richness is needed. Americans love it because they have a dead palate. Mm-hmm. See, because most Americans, because they eat so much sugar and so much processed food, that their palate is deadened. Now, you'll notice this if you start eating clean and you go to a cleaner, unprocessed, you know, a natural diet, a diet that's filled with whole foods and little sugar, and you'll find that over time you're brightened, right? And you'll start to notice flavors that you didn't notice before. So when you eat clean and you adapt a more natural way of living, a more ancestral way of thinking about food, organic food, low sugar, I mean, the sugar thing is so toxic, which is one of the reasons that we lab test all of our wines for a number of things. But among the things we're lab testing for are sugar. So all of our wines are sugar free. And just because a wine doesn't taste sweet doesn't mean it doesn't have sugar in it, right? Because wine has a foundation of acid. And if the acid is high enough, you can't taste the sugar, right? And so not even we can taste it. I mean, sugar in wines ranges from 0 grams per liter, which is what we drink and sell, up to as high as 300 grams per liter. And to give you a reference point, Coca-Cola is about 110, 108 grams per liter. Now, the wines that I speak of at 300 grams, these are like crazy ice wines, dessert wines. Almost nobody's drinking these. But even in store-bought wines, you can commonly see sugar in the 10 to 40 grams per liter. Not near that of a Coca-Cola, but very common 20, 25, 30 grams per liter in commercial wines. And I happen to believe that sugar is also a very dangerous neurotoxin. It's also has wreaks havoc on other parts of your body, but particularly your brain, and creates this high glucose environment that results in this hyperproduction of insulin, which I think is the foundation for many chronic illnesses. So I try to stay away from sugar and go to a tremendous amount of effort to avoid it. I don't eat commercial condiments or salad dressings prepared in restaurants or anything like that because they all contain sugar. Mm-hmm. Sugar is hidden in virtually everything, as you might know. So anyway, categorically define the differences in the natural. So natural wine is always or biodynamically farmed. And biodynamic, we won't go down the wormhole, is really in a prescriptive advanced form of organic farming. It is typically, almost always, they're old vines, which matters in the quality of the fruit. In our case, and almost all natural wines, but all wines that we buy and sell are dry farmed, which means the name of our company is Dry Farm Wines. Dry farming means that they have no irrigation. And that's really important for a whole lot of reasons. And let me touch on a couple of reasons, couple of points about irrigation. Much of irrigation facts are common sense. And everything I'm sharing with your audience, 76 additives, to the wine industry, all of this is available online. If you search FDA wine additives, the list will come right up from the government's website, right? And so the wine industry has been very successful in keeping that secret until I came along. So I've been spreading that secret around just a bit. But anyway, dry farming is really important because most of this is common sense, and I'll tell you why you irrigate in a moment, but irrigation fundamentally changes the physiology of how the plant relates to the earth and, most importantly, how it ripens fruit, right? And so irrigation creates lazy and weak plant, right? And just like with resistance training and weightlifting, when we subject the animal and the plant to resistance, it becomes stronger and it produces a higher quality and a higher character of fruit, right? So an irrigated grapevine has a root ball about 2 feet wide and about 3 feet deep, right? Because it gets all of its nutrient in the way of liquid nitrogen and its water source directly from this little tube just above the trunk. And more than 99% of U.S. vineyards are irrigated. America is the most irrigated grape farming in the world. And the reason you irrigate is about money, right? So irrigated grapevines have higher yield and fruit that weighs more, and the fruit is sold by the ton, right? So when you put a bunch of water in a grape berry, it weighs more. So irrigation is strictly about greed and money. Makes the sense. Same thing that's happened to the rest of industrial farming and our food source. An unirrigated grapevine can have a root structure that can be as much as 30 or 40 feet deep because the vine is struggling. These little hair-like capillary roots is struggling to break apart tiny pieces of minerals and soil to find water. And it's also struggling against its neighbor. Plants talk to each other. It's also struggling against its neighbor and fight for the same nutrient water. Right? This struggle creates a much higher quality of fruit because it's not a lazy vine. Now, the Europeans know this because Europeans have been making wine for over 3,000 years. And in most of Europe, it's a crime. It's against the law to irrigate a grapevine. So very strict laws in Europe that govern grape farming and their appellation to appellation, country to country. But in almost all of Europe, it's against the law to irrigate a grapevine because, when I know it fundamentally changes the quality of the fruit. Now, the vine knows that too. You see, the vine doesn't care about winemaking. The vine has this one goal. The vine is striving to produce the very best fruit that it can so that the bird will choose its most flavorful fruit and propagate the seed, So the vine's goal is producing its highest quality fruit. When you irrigate it, you get a lazy vine, right? The other thing that irrigation does too that's really important is irrigation reduces, and this is common sense, there's studies to show this, but this is common sense. Irrigation fundamentally reduces the quality of the antioxidants or polyphenols and flavonoids that are contained in grapes, and particularly red wine, because red wine gets most of its polyphenols, including resveratrol, which is the most famous one, from contact with the skins. And so for your audience that doesn't know how wine is made, I want to cover two things there that are important. One, how the polyphenols get in red wine that are not present in white wine. White wine has just over 200 polyphenols, red wine just over 800. And then also want to cover how wines become sugar-free or not, because it's the most common question we get. How are your wines sugar-free? They're both issues have to do with the winemaking process and particularly the fermentation process. Let me cover, first of all, why red wine is healthier and why it has more polyphenols. So when wine is made, white wine is made from free-run juice. What I mean by that is that juice is pressed from the grape and it free runs off of the press. And that's how white wine is made, from that free run juice. It has no skin contact, or most white wines don't. They're so rare. Skin contacts in white wine are so rare, it's not worth us talking about. But so red wine also pressed, the juice that runs off of a red wine grape is also clear. Squeeze the juice from a red wine grape and a juice from a white wine grape, they're both clear.
Really?
This is how red wine gets its color. Once the juice is pressed and put into tank, the skins and seeds are then added to the tank. Mm-hmm. And those skins and seeds are where the red wine gets its color and also tannins. And so it's also where it gets most of its polyphenols. Right. And so then the red wine is allowed to macerate with the skins, contact with the skins, and then they stir them and punch them down and keep this all process going for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, right? Depending upon the winemaker's style and what they're trying to do. So it's the skin contact is where red wine gets its color. It's also where it gets all of these additional polyphenols, and that comes from the skins, not from the juice itself. Then, as I covered earlier with yeast, in the natural wine, there's no added yeast. The yeast is already present from the grapes, and it spontaneously ferments itself. So natural wines have nothing added, no alteration. So as soon as the temperature rises sufficiently enough, you may know when your grandmother made bread, she had put the dough in a warm place, right? Because that activates the yeast. So once the yeast is activated by temperature to rise in the cellar, the yeast will start eating the sugar. This is how the result of that is ethyl alcohol and carbon dioxide. So this is how you make out. This is how wine is made. The yeast eats the sugar like a little Pac-Man, and it spits out ethyl alcohol and carbon dioxide. If the yeast is allowed by the winemaker, if the yeast is allowed to complete its fermentation and eat all of the available sugar, then the yeast will die, and the resulting wine will be sugar free. Now, what's happening in commercial wines is that, again, the winemaker is introducing salt to the fermentation process to prematurely kill the yeast, leaving behind residual sugar, or known as RS in the industry. Right. And so this residual sugar, which Americans are addicted to sugar, people love sugar, whether or not you can taste it or not, you can still feel the neuro effect of sugar. And you know that if you're sugar free or have experienced periods of being sugar free, when you eat it in any measurable dose, you can feel it. Right. Yeah. You can feel it in your brain. And so commercial wines are killing the yeast before it completes its fermentation, leaving behind this residual sugar. That there's no wines I'm aware of and you see this, people say no added sugar to wine. Well, that's this kind of BS. Nobody's adding sugar to wine, right? What they're doing is breaking the fermentation before it completes its process, leaving sugar behind. And any wine company you see that says no added sugar, that's just BS. This is marketing talk. Nobody's adding
loophole.
Sugar. Yeah. Well, this is BS. They're not saying the wine's sugar free. They're saying there's no sugar added. Well, I'm telling you, there's no sugar added to any wine. And if it has sugar in it, it's not because it's been added. It's because it's been broken off and allowed this residual sugar to remain. So native yeast fermentation, nothing added, nothing subtracted, and then straight to bottling. So when we talk about wine making, we talk about wine growing. So our wines are grown, not made. Our wines are grown in the vineyard because by the time they get to the cellar, nothing's happening but a spontaneous wild fermentation. That's it. And so that's not what's happening in commercial wines. So it's all these additives to higher sugar, higher alcohol. And then finally, this story that the wine industry tells you. See, so what's happened in the wine industry is exactly what's happened in our food supply. That's been massive corporate consolidation, driven around greed and money, which has killed our food supply. And I want to talk about what I call organic industrial farming, just following a really important concept.
Okay.
Because now we've got, in our food supply, we've got what I call industrial organic farming. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But so what's happened in our food supply is exactly the same thing that's happened in the wine supply. And this has happened in the last 20 years. So what I'm about to tell you is easily verifiable online, as all these facts. 52% of all the wines manufactured in the United States are made by just three giant conglomerates, over half. And the top 30 companies make more than 70% of the U.S. wines. Now, why your audience doesn't understand that is because these multi-dollar, very slick marketing conglomerates who make wines in massive factories in Central California, right, which is where most of this wine is made, they hide behind tens of thousands of labels and brands to have you believe that you're drinking from a farmhouse, right? You got the little farmhouse on the front of it. Yeah. Well, that farmhouse is really this massive factory in Central California, where most of these wines are made. And they hide behind this story. They sell wine through stories. You see magazine ads. I mean, the sunset, the dog, and the farmer. That's all BS, right? That's just not accurate. That's just that behind that is a massive conglomerate, right? And this is how wine is sold. This is also how it's sold as a health product, but in fact, it's not a health product and it's not natural in most cases. So just before we break off to take some questions, giving you more than you bargained for in your education about commercial and natural wines, but I want to talk about a concept that we find really interesting that people don't think a lot about, I think. And we think a lot about it because we live on and around natural farms, primarily in Europe. We have four growers in South Africa. We have two growers in Chile, and the rest of them are spread across Europe. There's no wines made in the U.S. that meet our strict criteria. So this concept of what I call industrial organic farming looks like this. So just because a grape is organic doesn't mean it's naturally made. Just because something's organic doesn't mean it's not, well, what I would call still an industrial form of farming. And I use this example for you to illustrate what we mean by this. Because we give all of these things a lot of thought. Because we want to live and, most importantly, eat and enjoy this flavor that is coming from living soil, this beauty, this kind of living things that are grown with love in the living soil under the watch and the care of a family farm. And I use this illustration to help your audience understand what I mean. When you go to the farmer's market, And you see vegetables there. Cabbage, broccoli, celery, cucumbers, pepper, whatever, tomatoes, it doesn't matter what they are. You see these vegetables and they're so, the veins in them are so rich and they're so colorful and you just want to take a photograph of it, right? Because it's so unbelievably picturesque. Look at it and you just know it tastes rich in bounty of love. In the spirit that was, that where the, in these living soils, where these organic, beautiful vegetables and fruits were grown. Now, you go to Whole Foods, where it's also organic, but they don't look like that, right? They don't look anything at all like that. They look, well, perhaps better, or not a lot different than
the exact same.
commercially farmed vegetables, but they don't look anything like that plump vibrancy that you see from a small family farm. So wine is the same way. So these natural wines from small family farms like that we exclusively grow wines at, this is the kind of character that you get. If you, just because you're drinking an organic wine from Whole Foods does not mean it's natural. In fact, you can't make natural wine in high enough quantities to, these are all very small productions because of this native yeast fermentation, you can't make wine in very high quantities. You can't make wine in high quantities, period, without the use of additives and additions and corrections, because it's just the environment is too unstable. So that's a little bit of the natural wine story.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was so interesting. So thank you for sharing all that. I think I just learned more about wine than, you know, I probably ever thought I would know. And I think most of the listeners now are probably never going to drink commercial wine again. I know I'm not.
Well, it's, you know, there's, we can go down the wormhole on any number of these topics and they're, you know, there's just a lot to kind of squeeze in 40 minutes, you know, of like, there's just a lot to know. And so I just try to hit the high points, you know, of, I'll give you another one. You know, we spoke before recording just quickly on resveratrol, which is the most famous of the antioxidants that is contained in red wine. But the fact of the matter is that resveratrol, red herring of marketing by the wine industry. The fact is there's no human proof, zero human proof, that resveratrol has any benefit to humans. There is some lab animals. There's some mice studies that show that it may extend lifespan. But the problem is that the concentration level that these mice were fed of resveratrol, you'd have to drink a swimming pool of red wine every week to get the same benefit. And so, you know, this, and again, there's been no human evidence at all. The only, as you know, the only real evidence that we have, which is one of my interests in fasting, I mean, the only real evidence we have of extending lifespan, a calorie restriction, and which is one of, you know, one of my interests in fasting when people say, oh, do you worry you don't get enough calories because you're only eating once per day? And, you know, I'm a weightlifter. And so, I don't, but I tell people, I don't worry about getting too many calories. In fact, my objective is just the opposite. I'd like to get fewer calories. Mm-hmm. And, it's still feeding that gut. See? So, the fact that I'm eating, sporadically isn't, hasn't resulted in any, nor has a ketogenic diet. And there's plenty of research to show that neither fasting or ketogenic diet waste away lean body mass. It does burn up a lot of fat though, which I'm super interested in.
Oh, I'm actually reading the Circadian Code right now, by Dr. Sachin Panda. And he talks a lot about how you can actually still maintain or even build muscle through fasting, or through time restricted eating is the way he called it. So, I mean, it really is a huge important thing for the body. I just did a podcast actually last week all about fasting. So for the listeners, if you want to learn more about fasting, check that out. But to get back onto the wine subject and on the, you know, you've talked about now, so alcohol, no good. Resveratrol, not really a benefit in wine. So, you know, we think of wine as this sort of healthy version of, you know, instead of drinking beer or liquor, we drink wine instead because it's more healthy. Is there any truth to this then? Or what are your thoughts on the actual health benefits of wine? Because you see blogs on Facebook and posts on Instagram that, you know, a glass of red wine a day is good for you and improves longevity and that. What are your actual thoughts then on the health benefits of wine?
Well, I mean, this is another wormhole. So there's studies actually on both sides of this.
Yeah.
I would cover your choice first, and you mentioned spirits and then beer. So when I think about drinking, what we do know for sure is that decreased mortality has been pretty clearly demonstrated with very moderate alcohol use. Problem is that many people don't drink moderately. Yeah. And so we also know that it's been pretty definitively shown, and especially in women, that excess alcohol use of alcohol abuse can lead to higher cancer rates. You've kind of got both sides of the coin. So here's how I think about it. We also know that there's these studies, all of these studies about nutrition, all these studies are, none of them are, particularly around nutrition or anything where there's not a control group, right? And you can't show a control group over a lifetime of somebody drinking wine. Mm-hmm. You can't show a control group over a lifetime of someone who changes their nutrition quite often or is not, these studies, I take them all with a grain of salt in the first place, right? So I think I'd largely depend on the proverb for all biohacking and nutritional experimentation, which I do a lot of, and fasting experimentations and cold thermogenesis and all the things that I experiment with, rely on the proverb, to feel is to understand. Mm-hmm. And so you need to, if you're in touch with your body, mind, and spirit, you know how you feel, right? And you let that be the indicator of what works for you or doesn't work. Fasting doesn't work for everybody. Ketogenic diet doesn't work for everybody. Drinking doesn't work for everybody. Drinking is very dangerous for some people, right? And some people just makes them assholes, right? And so it's like, which is also very dangerous to my peace and well-being. Yeah. So it's like, so here's how I think about it. So beer, whether it's gluten-free or not, for the paleo listener, strictly off the table. And the reason that beer is strictly off the table is not because of the gluten, although that might be of concern to some. Yeah. It's the maltose sugar. So it contains this very specific type of sugar that's a brewing byproduct. This is what causes beer guts. So maltose sugar converts instantly in the liver to fat, right? It's a very specific sugar. And not all sugars are created equal, right? So fructose is more dangerous than glucose, right? The sugar contained from fruits. But so there's all kinds of different sugars in that, but this maltose sugar, which is a very specific sugar that's a byproduct of the brewing process, goes right to the liver and converts, which is why you see people have, quote, beer guts, right? That's from the sugar. So beer is strictly off the table because you already established some anti-sugar. And I certainly don't want a gut. Then you go to spirits. And in the paleo community, and also the keto community, spirit, and particularly tequila, has gotten, kind of the spirit of choice. Any clear spirit, whether it be vodka, but tequila is the kind of the spirit of choice because it's made from this plant and it's distilled and it's clean. And I get all that argument. And I don't argue against that concept at all. It's clean, for sure. The problem is it's 45% alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm concerned about the dosage of alcohol, if I'm concerned about the neurotoxicity of alcohol, I don't want to drink higher alcohol products, right? The other common problem with mixed drinks, and this is different if you're taking shots, but mixed drinks oftentimes have mixers of one kind or another that contain sugar, right? Or other toxins. So if you're going to drink tequila, then I just guess you take a shot of it, right? Or create what Rob Wolf, among every health leader, endorses our wines, right? What Rob Wolf calls the NorCal margarita, which is like sparkling water, tequila, and lime juice.
Yep.
Without the sugar. So the problem with drinking, in higher alcohol products, and the reason I don't endorse or drink spirits is because of the alcohol content. Most of us do not have a drink. Most of us do not have a glass of wine or a beer. We have several, right? And so if we're going to drink several, I recommend lowering alcohol that is contained within the beverage. And so you get beer off the table because of sugar and gluten, and then that leaves wine and lower alcohol wines, which is why we promote and drink these very special low alcohol wines, but are also clean and without any additives and are 100% naturally made. So, you know, the studies there, again, to go back to the studies, there are a number of studies, and I take all of this with a grain of salt one way or the other because there's no control group. There are a number of studies showing that red wines in particular have very positive cardiovascular and neurological benefit in moderate dose, right? And so, and again, there are as many corresponding studies that show that alcohol abuse is also neurologically and biologically dangerous, right? So, I just rely on how I feel, and I feel a lot better after a glass of wine.
I was just going to say, I mean, if, you know, whether it is or not is still a debate, but I mean, if you come home from a stressful day at work and, you know, a glass of wine is the one thing that kind of relaxes you and just lets you sort of chill out and helps mentally, then, you know, why not? It's really not a huge deal if, as long as you're not having 10 glasses of wine when you get home from work, right? I think that's the big difference.
Yeah. And when you see, and how we use wine, how we drink wine is in a community around the dinner table. Right. And so, and look, if we look at Dan Buettner's work with Blue Zones around the world, right. There are five, three of them. Wine is a daily staple in their life. And, but natural wines, these are wines that are made kind of in the garage in Icaria or, you know, where, or in Crete, where these people are making their own wines, right? Same way that our wines are made. They're all natural. They don't have any additives in them. There's no alterations. They're fermented with native yeast, so on and so forth. And I think the real, you know, to feel is to understand. And when you drink our wines, you feel differently. You don't have any hangover. You have a lighter, cleaner buzz. I mean, our business has grown 60,000% in 3 years. Touching tens and tens of thousands of people around the United States who continue to drink our wines daily or weekly or, you know, and because they feel different. And we get, you know, hundreds of emails a week from people who, you know, talk about how they feel differently. Or if you look on social posts, you'll see our customers commenting to how they just feel better and different. But when you I want to go back to the Blue Zones for a second. The common thread that we see that exists within all the Blue Zones, the majority of them, wine is a staple product, but not all, two of them not. And so what wine does is it elevates our spiritual and emotional experience, right? Particularly around the dinner table and particularly with other people. And so this is where the number one thread that we believe causes people to live healthier longer is very integrated social and cultural contacts, right? So people are inside of a community of care and love. They're spending a lot of time together in this village-like setting, right? Well, the same thing we do around the dinner table. And when we drink these natural living wines, which have this energy, they're still alive. This is energy inside the bottle. Right. When we drink this, and what it does is there's this elevated euphoria, this extension of creative expression, and this, you know, this availability. We when we drink wine in this spiritual setting around food and the table, the window of vulnerability comes down a little bit and we become more emotionally accessible and we become more open to sharing and receiving love. And listen, I think the human animal, its primary purpose is to love and to be loved. Mm-hmm. And so anything that we can bring in that creates more love in our life around something so beautiful and delicious and around this community of table and food. This cultural aspect is really the magic of wine.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Completely agree. It's so true. And that is the beauty of it, like you said. Now, one of the questions I have, so of course, if you're in the US and you want to get wine, you get dry farm wines. It's the best there is by far. I think, you know, everyone agrees. If you've got to go to a grocery store because you need one right away and you don't have any dry farm wines, or you're outside of the US, let's say, is there anything that our listeners can look for in the store or on the, you know, the bottle and the label? Is there anything that they should know to actually be able to pick a good or a decent wine, or are they all bad?
Well, it's not that they're all bad. There are 56 additives approved in the EU for the use in winemaking. So just because it's European wine doesn't mean that it's going to be healthier. It's more likely to be, though. So if I'm in a restaurant and, you know, and I'm looking at a wine list, or I'm in a retail store and I'm going to look at something that I'm going to be looking for alcohol levels, first of all. So I'm going to be drinking something that's lower in alcohol. That's more likely to be naturally made. Doesn't guarantee it, but it's more long. And I'm going to choose from probably most wine lists. I'm going to be looking for something made in central France.
Okay.
Beaujolais or Loire Valley, the Jura region. But I'm going to be buying anything from Europe. And if I can see it, I want to look for something that looks more homemade, right? It's not got a fancy label on it. It's going to be lower alcohol. That's if I'm in a store. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm in a restaurant, then, you know, hopefully there's some kind of wine director there. It just depends on what kind of restaurant you're in and what city you're in. You know, some natural wines are available in many restaurants in select markets like New York, San Francisco, Chicago, but you're not going to find them in Topeka. You know, you're not going to find them in Kansas City. They're just not there. They're limited quantities and, you know, and they're, but, you know, they're, and in many farm to table restaurants, which are very popular now in these key markets, like I just mentioned, they'll pride themselves in having some natural wines on the list. So you can also ask if they have any natural wine, or ask the somm or ask the wine director to go to their cellar and try to find you some low alcohol wines. And I consider low alcohol to be 12.5% or less.
Okay.
Low alcohol to present to you, and then ask them, hey, I want a lighter, fresher, cleaner taste, you know, and try to get some guidance you can do.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, I mean, so price, it doesn't matter. You have some wines that are super expensive that are not natural wines. Why are they so expensive? Is it going to be any better, or what's the...
Are you talking about wines in the marketplace?
Yeah, in the marketplace.
Yeah. So wine is sold in two ways. Wine is sold through story. Mm-hmm. And wine is sold through ratings, right? Because you have no idea. You walk in the store and... or you pick up a wine magazine and it's like 95 points. Well, that must mean it's good, right? I mean, there's thousands of wines. You walk in the grocery store, there's going to be hundreds or a thousand wines there to look at when you pass down the aisle. You have no idea one from the other, right? Yeah. Service is so popular for our customers because our customers know our wines are lab tested. They're tasted by us. They're guaranteed, and we're trusted by our customers because we walk this talk. We live this health lifestyle. You know, we are ketogenic. We are living this higher health path. And so This is not marketing speak. This is how we live. Right. And so I don't want to drink that poison. I'm not going to have you drink it either. And so our customers know that with us, they also know that we are own these farms in Europe all the time. I mean, we have people in Europe all the time buying wines, touring farms, meeting with farmers, so on and so forth. But wines are sold through story. So if you can get Robert Parker, the most famous wine critic in the world, to give you a high rating, you can charge a lot for your wine. Doesn't matter how it was made, right? And so, and Robert Parker just happens to like super rich, high alcohol, fruity wines that are not healthy for you. And he's not healthy either. All you have to do is Google a picture of him. His name's Robert Parker, and you'll see you don't want to look like him, right? And so he's also type 2 diabetic, and the list could go on. I'm sure he's probably a nice man, but you know, his choice in wine and his choice in health choices are not good.
Well, hope so, he doesn't listen to Health Simple Radio.
Well, I don't care whether he does or not. But he's no fan of natural wines, I can tell you that. But so anyway, this wine is sold. The higher price wines, $150, $250, $500 bottles, these are sold through ratings almost exclusively, or super, super historic pedigree of story, right? Like in Bordeaux, right? These are not natural wines. There's very little natural wine in Bordeaux. Bordeaux may be the most insane, you know, priced wines in the world with, you know, kind of the greatest cult story. But there's almost no natural wine there. Same thing in Napa. Napa produces some amazing cult wines up to $1,000 a bottle, right? But they're not natural. Mm-hmm. Now, some people love them. I don't drink them, but you know, a lot of people love them. But and we have customers who come here who drink our wines, who come and go to wineries and, you know, have a perfectly nice time, but they're not natural.
You mentioned earlier how difficult it was to, you know, get enough wine from the natural way of, I guess, growing your wines. How is it that you guys are able to make enough to support your customers? Just curious.
Well, that's a great question. Last year we ran out of wine 4 times. Oh, yeah. So we have made a concerted investment of both time and money in Europe to get more of these wines being made over the last couple of years. And so we're the largest natural wine buyer in the world by many X. And so we have the ability to influence a global market. But yeah, wine supply has been our only real challenge. Mm-hmm. It's early last year, we had up to 10-day holds before we could ship. So you place an order today and it would be 10 days before we could ship it out because we just didn't have the wine. Mm-hmm. That happened like 3 or 4 times. Now, fortunately, over the last year, we've worked really, really hard to solve that. And we have been able to build up an inventory that allows us to continue to grow at a pretty, pretty healthy pace without these issues. But yeah, that was a big issue for us.
Well, good for you guys for, you know, sticking to your roots and keeping it, you know, natural and keeping it high quality, because oftentimes this is what happens is when someone has a product that, you know, blows up and gets very popular, quality goes out the window and there you have it, right? But you guys are kind of stuck with it. Now, can you talk about the process of actually getting some wine if someone wants to order it? Because it's delivered to the door, which is awesome. Can you kind of talk about how someone does that?
Yeah, so we have really kind of 2 ways to get wine. The most popular way is we're a wine club. And so people sign up for, you know, red, white mix, sparkling rosé, whatever they want, on whatever frequency they want. The 2 most frequent plans that we have are monthly or every other month, 6 bottles or 12. And then we have lots of customers who get a lot more than that and some who get less. Maybe they take quarterly delivery or whatever. Most of our customers get monthly or bi-monthly shipments. And they can choose what they want, all exactly the same. They all average $22 a bottle. And that's the most economical way to buy wine from us is subscribe to our wine club. And most of the people who we sell wine to are regular wine drinkers. Mm-hmm. And they drink regular wine so frequently that they want to make sure they're drinking healthy. And then if you sign up to our email list, then which is on our website, then we do special offers throughout the month where you can buy one-off versions of special offers that we have without subscribing. You pay a little bit more for it because we give, you know, the subscription price to our members, but not that much more. So you could get one off if you just sign up for our email list. But for your listeners today, we have a special offer, a 1-penny bottle with their first order. And all they have to do is go to the link dryfarmwines.com/healthsimple. Right? That's it. Just dryfarmwines.com/healthsimple and they can get a penny bottle.
1 penny. And I'll make sure to put that link in the notes so you can just tap it and you've got it there. It makes it super easy, but we appreciate that. A penny for a bottle of wine is an amazing thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Listen, I have one more question. I don't know if there's anything else actually that you want to add first, but I have one question at the end that I ask all the guests that come on the show.
Sure.
Is there anything that you want to add about wine first? I think we covered.
Just enjoy your holidays. Be careful on alcohol, you know?
Yeah. Well, Thanksgiving coming up, everyone's got to just take it easy. All right. So, you know, you've gone on a health journey and you're into ketogenic diets, you're into intermittent fasting and basically biohacking. So you've done a lot. So I'm really interested in your answer here. Now, let's say you were to go back to the very beginning of your health journey. So where everything first started and you lost everything that you currently know right now about health, about wellness, about everything. What would be the one piece of knowledge that you would want to tell yourself or the one piece of knowledge that you would want to keep if you were just getting started on your health journey?
Meditation, hands down, the most important biohack in history. It's meditation. Been written for millennia, from global thought leaders, from the Stoics to Buddha, to, you know, Ray Dalio, who, you know, wrote the book Principles, was New York Times bestselling list, number one book sales on Amazon last year, runs one of the wealthiest hedge funds in the world. Meditation, hands down. Meditation is the foundation of all that comes forward. So without a quiet mind, without a gentle spirit, then, you know, I think everything that follows that is just a struggle. Mm-hmm. So for me, health and wellness, meditation would be the one thing I couldn't lose, or one thing I would have to start with. You know, following that, it would be getting rid of sugar.
Yeah. You know, so I think we gathered that throughout this episode.
Yeah. If you don't know, I'm not a big fan of sugar.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
awesome. Well, good advice. I mean, meditation has been a huge thing for me as well. You know, just being able to be more mindful throughout the day, you know, has changed so much for me. So it's something I preach quite often as well. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for coming on this episode, you know, and sharing all this information. Very interesting stuff that I did not know or think I would ever know. So really appreciate you coming on here and sharing that with myself and with all the listeners.
Thanks, man. Day. Happy holidays to everybody. And if it's not holidays when you're hearing this, find a glass of wine.
All right, Todd, have a good one.
Thanks, man.
That's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check out our new ebook, So You Want to Eat Healthy. You can find it at the link healthsimpleinfo.com/eat-healthy or in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this episode or have any comments or questions, feel free to leave us a review or hit us up on Instagram. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Have a great day.